Welcome to the 25th ResEd podcast, produced by Media Snackers with Global Kids. Coming up is a podcast interview with Brett Pierce, executive director of a project called Panwepper. As ever, we'll pass over to the Global Kids guys with the news and events.
Hey everyone, this is Amira.
And this is Rick.
And we are here today for the January 26th news for the ResEd community. First off, as part of a broader study on pedagogical innovation in new learning communities, LearnCom has come to ResEd and they're interested in finding out what people are getting out of our online community. It's an excellent opportunity for us as educators to really get some hands-on research about what's going on ResEd and how learning can take place in these informal online learning communities. All we need is for members of the ResEd community to fill out a short survey, and that's available on the ResEd homepage. It just takes about 10 to 15 minutes, and all of the results and research will be posted on the ResEd website as soon as that's made available to us.
In the investment news, we got a report from Virtual Worlds Management this week about the level of investments for 2008 in Virtual Worlds. More than $594 million, that's U.S. dollars, in 63 Virtual Worlds-related companies was invested in 2008. There has been a steady decline in investments from 2007's initial burst of over $1.4 billion. According to Chris Sherman, the executive director of Virtual World Management, this year wasn't bad for all sectors. 19 youth-oriented properties received over $70.47 million over the course of the year. The bulk of that was in quarter one and quarter three. So he continues that as more youth worlds come to the market over the course of the year, speculators were worried that the space was becoming overcrowded. Others have seen it as a sector for opportunity, and it appears as if venture capitalists are still at least somewhat interested. So check out the report at Virtual Worlds Management, and we'll have a link to it on ResEd.
Next up, Selene Turkey of Columbia University's Teacher College has recently published her online independent evaluation of Global Kids Science Through Second Life program. For all of you that were following the project, it was a program that used web tools in a standard-based high school science class in New York City. The findings were quite interesting. Among them, students' self-efficacy and self-confidence in their abilities to do science-related work increased. Compared to the traditional science curriculum, the number of students reporting being overwhelmed by science class fell by about 50%. Low-achieving student grades improved significantly compared to the previous semester. And lastly, students' collective intelligence skills improved throughout the semesters. More students reported that they felt more comfortable working with others to get something done using digital media in the PERS survey. The entire report is on resed.org.
We got the news from Amy of Shaping Youth, who tells us that the Games for Change Festival is coming up for 2009 from May 27 to 29 at Parsons, the New School for Design in New York City. They are accepting proposals, I think now, all the way through February 17th, if you'd like to submit a proposal to hold a panel at Games for Change. It's an amazing conference that brings together all sorts of new media people who are interested in this game space, which of course intersects very well with a lot of the virtual world work that a lot of us are doing.
And lastly, for this week's news, check out the weekly discussion moderated by Daniel Voyager, a Second Life guru and a good friend of Global Kids, who's going to be focusing on Philip Rosedale's comments at last week's Metanomics on the direction Second Life is going and changing from an age-segregated space to a mixed-age space sometime in the future. There's going to be an opportunity for ResEd members to leave their voice comments about the implications and effects of this, given that it's such a significant change and a radical shift for all of us in education that are using adult and virtual world spaces. That's it for this week's news. If you have anything that you'd like highlighted on upcoming news podcasts or on the ResEd website, send those over to resedinfo@globalkids.org.
Yes, my name is Brett Pierce, and I'm the executive director of a project called Panwepper. And Panwepper is produced by Sesame Workshop, which is the company, the not-for-profit company behind Sesame Street. They are based out of New York City. And our other partner with Panwepper is the Merrill Lynch Foundation. They were our funders.
Great. Well, it's a pleasure to have you with us, Brett. Let's get a bit of background behind Panwepper then. You talked about who made it, but why did you develop the project?
The project came out of a desire to to find a platform to teach 21st century skills to young kids. Penwapa is targeted to kind of 5, 6, 7, and 8-year-olds. And we recognized that there was a dearth of materials out there, kind of colorful, bright, engaging materials out there for this age group about the world, about how to engage with the world, about how to formulate a certain kind of responsibility to engage with the world. And we believe that we could come up with through our creativity and our methodology at Sesame Workshop, come up with a very cool creative vehicle that would allow kids to engage with the world on their own terms rather than be kind of rather than be enveloped by the world in ways where they just don't have the tools to absorb it and understand it.
So if anybody's never seen Penwapa, could you describe what it is?
Yes, it's kind of virtual world light. And I say light partially because of the age group we're dealing with, and also partially because we only had so much fun. So we couldn't go to kind of certain kind of virtual world depths that certainly a lot of our commercial competitors can go to. But we do see it as potentially many children's first online immersive experience. And what they do is, it's a totally safe environment. There's no actual writing in it. There's no email addresses asked for or delivered. But we do ask the kids where they, what country they come from. And you say you come from the United Kingdom, let's say. And then we will assign you a name, United Kingdom 522. Because you are the 522nd child from the United Kingdom to enter into Penwapa World. And then what you do is you get to build your own kind of home. You get to decide what your favorite food, musical instrument is, animal, sports, activity. And this becomes part of your identity as a Penwapa child. And then you can travel around the world and visit with Penwapa kids in South Africa, in Bolivia, in Indonesia, in China, in all of these countries, because we have over 188,000 Penwapa kids from over 180 countries that have registered into the world. And so you're able to explore the world, leave messages, all prescribed messages, with other kids in these other countries, and hopefully they'll open up their Penwapa mail and leave the message back with you.
Wow. So what? Tell us about kind of what the main unique elements associated with this world do you think differentiate it from other places then that are out there, like Club Penguin, for example?
There's a couple of distinct elements there. First of all, we're in 5 languages. So we are not we work very hard not to be an American export, not to be kind of an English language world exclusive to English language listeners. We had a lot of international advisors involved in the creation of Penwapa and vetting our humor and vetting our scripts and vetting our imagery so that we didn't look like we were kind of an export to the rest of the world. Our languages are English, Spanish, Arabic, Japanese, and Mandarin. So one of the distinct qualities is that I think we are one of the only truly global virtual worlds out there for kids. We are not an English creation that is then kind of translated for the people of Spain or translated for the people of Russia. We're conceived globally. I think a second unique piece is that we have Muppets. We have Muppet characters. We're coming from a Sesame Street background. Although our target age is older than most Sesame Street kids, which is kind of 5 and younger, we have a whole new set of Muppets, and they live on Penwapa Island. And Penwapa Island is a floating island. So when you as a child come to visit Penwapa and you land on Penwapa Island, you are not necessarily of your country. You are just on this island that floats around on the world, and so you're of this world. And what Penwapa means is, it is a real word, and it comes from the Chiluba language, which is one of the 4 official languages from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and it means here on this earth. I think a third unique piece is our Penwapa flags, or our Penwapa cards. They're kind of one and the same. It's like an identity card for the child. It has a picture of their avatar on it, and it has a picture of their, as I said, their favorite kind of sport, activity, animal, food. And one of the things that you can do in Penwapa World is you can reorganize the world out of geopolitical and into food groups. So I may be a UK citizen or I'm an American citizen, but I'm also a lover of grapes. And I can just, with the click of the button, rearrange the world into people who love grapes and people who love noodles and people who love tacos. And there I am living on grape land. And my neighbor is from Finland over here and from Namibia over here because they both also love grapes. And it allows you as a user to see yourself through a variety of different global lenses, not just as a citizen of a country, but as a citizen of a lover of Frisbee or a lover of tacos or a lover of tigers.
That's
so I think those are some of our qualities which distinguish us from Club Penguin, say. And the last one I could go on for quite a while on this front, actually. But we're not a consumer-driven virtual world. You don't earn money and points. You don't play games to earn money to adorn your home. Okay, so that is not the energy that drives Penwapa World. And the other thing is, we're not an imaginary world like Webkinz is, or like Club Penguin is, or like Dizzywood is. Okay, we are our playground is the globe itself. And so by automatically making that where we can imagine and where we can play and where we can do treasure hunts, we are reinforcing some of the objectives of the project, which have to do with awareness of a wider world.
Which kind of leads me onto a question about why you chose virtual world settings, or this type of medium, if you like, as a solution for what you were trying to achieve.
We chose a virtual world. It's a mix. There are videos on this site. There are four kind of 8-minute videos which feature our Muppets, 6 brand new Muppet characters, which are also available for broadcast. But we're not a broadcast-led kind of concept. You know, we've been on PBS here in the States. We've been in a few other places around the world. But those, traditionally, Sesame Workshop has worked in a broadcast model where you put characters out there and they model the behavior that you want your viewers to kind of absorb and take in and then do on their own. Okay, so you put that behavior up on the screen, you see how they behave in certain situations, whether it's a conflict resolution type of curriculum or respect for elders or healthy nutrition, and then the kids take away those messages and do it on their own. What we wanted to do was kind of change that model around and certainly put that out there, make this character-driven, because we know that we engage kids through characters. But the internet and virtual world is a user-driven type of environment. And so we wanted to give them the opportunity to explore it themselves, to be empowered to kind of take on our goals of awareness of a wider world, appreciating similarities and valuing differences, and understanding of and responsiveness to economic disparity in the world. Those are our three goals that kind of drive a lot of Penwapa. And we weren't going to achieve those goals through kind of broadcast alone. We needed an environment where the user was kind of empowered to do that. It needed to be very safe. And there's a lot of kind of tension between, well, it's safe but also kind of satisfactory in terms of the ability to network and connect with kids around the world. And I don't think we've got a long way to go on that. There are limitations to Penwapa on the social networking side, and certainly as compared to a lot of our virtual world competitors. And it is our certain hope and desire to be able to address those kind of relatively shallow areas as we continue on with the project.
So tell us how you've created this world for educators as well. How could they get involved, and what can they add to it, and what can they use it for?
Initially, Penwapa was created as an informal educational tool. It was not designed for formal educational settings. That's what Sesame Workshop does. They're not a company that gets involved with schools directly. They're more kind of an after-school organization, home, parents, that kind of thing. The amazing thing was that when we launched in October of 2007, so we're, you know, a little over a year old, it was the teachers that responded most vigorously to it. It's the teachers that said, we've been looking for a tool like this, and nothing's out there, so help us out. And based on that, we developed a huge range of curricula. that is available. Everything's free. It's all online. If you kind of click on the caregivers button and then you go into the teacher's guide sections, what you will see is a wide range of curricula from four-week units that have a pretest and a post-test, so that educators can kind of measure the efficacy of their time spent with Panwapa, to a much larger community citizenry project, which asks kids to, one, identify community. What is their community? How would they define it? Is it their school? Is it their club? Is it their church? Is it their town? Okay, and then takes them through a three-step process of creating a map of that community as if another, like, Muppet character, a seven-year-old, would come to visit them, creating a timeline of that community. How did your community come to be what it is today? And then creating kind of a current portrait of the community. What is it that makes your community unique now and as you kind of go forward? So there's a variety of different possibilities there. And for the UK, we worked with Oxfam Education, and they are very much into kind of a global citizenry curriculum. And they have taken our entire curricula and cross-referenced it with the national standards of the United Kingdom. So it's also, so it's available kind of, you know, in for educators worldwide, because we are available in all five languages, but in the UK in particular, it has been cross-referenced to the national standards, so that it will facilitate use in that country.
Great. So I'm going to wrap up the interview with a future question, which is two-part, really. What is the future of Panwapa? What have you still got to do, and what would you like it to become? And then kind of a wider question around virtual worlds and education. Where do you see that going?
With Panwapa, you know, we're a funded project with the Merrill Lynch Foundation initially. We all know that Merrill Lynch has been bought by Bank of America. We are talking with a variety of partners, including Google Earth, including UNICEF, including a group called Green Cross International out of Geneva, which has a kind of an environmental bent to it, to foment kind of additional partnerships, which include both kind of funding as well as expertise to bring Panwapa to the next level. You know, my dream along those lines is Google Earth is one of the most extraordinary tools out there, and yet kids kind of 8 and under don't have a real strong pull to it. It's not an attractive vehicle to them. It's too complex. There's too much information. They don't really have the capacity to absorb Google Earth. And yet it's a stunning map onto Panwapa. And if we can create the scaffolding, which we think we can, so that with our world as kind of mapped over certain very simplistic elements of Google Earth, we can make that bridge between the virtual world and action in the real world and understanding in the real world. And that's our challenge with the virtual world thing, is we can get them to Panwapa, they'll have fun, they'll begin to explore the world, but we want that experience to cross over into real action. And I think that's the challenge of virtual worlds in education, is how do you take that experience, which you can create so gorgeously in an online environment, and make sure that kids, especially these young kids, that's a tough call. It's a really tough call for 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, to leave this world with a sense that of empowerment to take on similar challenges in the real world. So in terms of virtual worlds in education, that's the challenge, I think, ahead. But the positive of virtual worlds in education is that unlike almost any other experience, they are solely and uniquely empowered and challenged. In a classroom, the class can be challenged. Yes, you individually can be challenged, but it's that one-on-one experience, if you can take them through a series of kind of obstacles and problem-solving challenges, that empowers them to realize they do have a voice, they can kind of bring about change, they can make a difference. If we can hold on to that feeling and then translate it out into the real world, then I think we've accomplished a lot, and I think virtual worlds are uniquely positioned to bring them to that place kind of in their heads, and then it's up to us to figure out ways to make sure that that spark, that stimulation that they feel from their experience with the virtual world carries over to some real world action.
Well, Brett, I'd just like to thank you for giving up your time to speak to Media Snackers. Really appreciate it.
It's been a total pleasure.
Thank you.
And here is your events calendar for upcoming education-related stuff happening in the virtual world. So it has already begun. It's the Second Life Education Support Fair, the first time that Linden Lab actually has organized a special fair, festival, whatever you want to call it, for educators who are using the space. It started on January 25th, and it runs all the way through the 30th. Most of the activities are happening at the support sim, although there are a few other sims that are used just for exhibitions, sort of a booth area. You can go to blog.secondlife.com or the Res Ed calendar to find out information about where you want to teleport to participate in this event.
Next up, Alliance Library System and Learning Times are pleased to announce on ResEd that an exciting conference is featuring science and virtual worlds taking place on January 30th. It's called Stepping into Science, and it's taking the day to explore the possibilities of using virtual worlds to learn and teach about science. The conference is going to take place entirely in Second Life. It's going to feature keynotes and panel discussion, as well as small breakout sessions, field trips, and an opportunity to participate in Science Friday, which is NPR's live broadcast from Second Life. For more information, you can check out the ResEd events listing or go to www.steppingintovirtualworlds.org.
At the real world, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Louisiana State University, you can attend the Mardi Gras Conference on Virtual Worlds from February 19th through 21st. We've been talking about it for a while, so just for more information, go to www.mardigrasconference.org.
And lastly, for this week's events, the Virtual World's Best Practice in Education Conference is being organized through ResEd. It'll be taking place on March 27th through 29th, and they just put out their calls for proposals last weekend. So if you're interested, this conference is going to be a community-based conference that provides opportunities for participants of Virtual Worlds to share current teaching, learning, and research practices in 3D virtual environments. It's looking fabulous. The submissions are due no later than February 28th. So join the group on ResEd to get all the details and to submit. That's it for this week's events. If you have anything that you'd like shared, please send those over to resedinfo@globalkids.org, and we'll make sure to highlight them in upcoming podcasts.
All the links referenced in this podcast, as well as the full transcripts, will be available on the show notes at resed.org.